Hey, everybody, Sarah back again. Today I have Kathy Fish. Do-da-da-da!
Hey, everyone, this is Sarah, and welcome to my show.
Welcome, Kathy.
Hello, I'm happy to be here today.
So, Kathy Fish is the founder of Fish and Associates, and she is a female financial advisor. Now, y'all know that this is a topic I really feel very strongly about, so I wanted to get some successful female advisors onto the show and hear from them about what their experiences is, what their experiences have been, because I think it could maybe be inspirational, and I think we could all learn from it in terms of if you're a female advisor starting out, this could be a source of inspiration for you. If you have a firm, you want to get female advisors into your business, this could also be useful to you as well. And as you know, there's never a better perspective than that of experience and one who has actually done what you are achieving to do. And that's what, you know, one of my goals is as a influencer in the industry to get the word out about getting more women in here successful at the top of it. Woohoo! So Kathy, we were talking before the show a little bit. You've been in this business, I mean, almost 3 decades now. Awesome. You know, tell me what have been some crossroads or some kind of really important points that shaped your path and your trajectory upwards as a woman in this business?
Yes. Well, I think I'd have to go back to the first year that I was in business. I came back in the good old days when most of us were working on commission only, and you were just, you know, you got paid a salary for 6 months and then you were thrown to the wolves, so to speak. And I was working for a firm here in Memphis, Tennessee, that after the first year, the current owner took a different direction, and he was going to just be a 401k administration, an ESOP provider. And I had the opportunity to just go off on my own with two other guys, not as a firm, but as three individuals sharing space together. And I had just recently gotten divorced, and the person that was going to the other company came to me and offered me a job as his administrative assistant because he said now that
sorry, Kathy.
That's all right.
Would they have said that to a man?
Pardon?
Would they have said that to a man?
No.
Be my administrative assistant? Okay. See, this is right there. Right.
Yeah.
Never.
So that was, and I knew that offer, if I went out on my own and it didn't work out, that I could go and find another job. But if I didn't try this at that point in my life, which was one of the most vulnerable points in my life, then I just felt like I would always regret it. And honestly, I really never looked back. It was difficult, but you know, I built my business doing workshops for retirement planning, the old successful money management seminars, and I also had the other advisor that I was sharing office space with at one point came to me and told me that I was never going to be as good of a salesperson as he was. And yeah, there were a few times in my career.
Okay,
when
so let's go back over that. What was he saying it? And I'm not trying to defend that comment at all, but what do you think was the basis for that comment?
Well, we had been doing some seminars together, and when we split up the leads, we had gone into a company that had both administrative people and had people that were, you know, the management. And he took all the people from this workshop that were management and basically was saying that, you know, he was a better salesperson and, you know, I would never be as good as he is. So, you know, he felt that he needed to take these leads because that was, you know, he didn't want me to screw it up. And the ironic thing about that was he never got any business from the management. And I got a couple of amazing clients that had close to $1 million back 30 years ago. So that was an interesting crossroad as well. And I made it.
Was he saying it like, based on anything, or was it just his opinion that he was the better salesperson? Like, was he, and I'm not justifying the comment, I'm just saying, was he saying like, look, I've gotten to the third meeting with these three prospects and you haven't even gotten to the first meeting? Or was it just, he was making it up based on sentiment?
Probably sentiment and ego. He actually was one of the top people in the company at that time. And I was newer, but you know, I had a lot of drive and it was just uncalled for. No, I was not at the same level as him, but that was like a challenge for me to say, you're never going to be as good as I am. And, you know, ultimately over time, I did as much business, if not more. So,
and I mean, the other question is like, what does being as good as I am even mean? Like, whose
exactly.
perspective, right?
And,
it was such an egotistical statement.
Ego-driven, yeah. You know?
But maybe that's worthy of thinking about is that, I mean, I have seen that it's, I think maybe harder for, I think women who are egotistical in the business maybe get a little bit of pushback on that. You know, that people have all kinds of things that they say about women who are, and I've had it said to me because I come across, at varying levels, but throughout my career, I've been very confident. I've come across that way. I'm outspoken, and I've gotten such a pushback from so many people that I feel like it's definitely warranted, but at the same time, I think that me being female makes it worse because I feel like people are less accepting of a woman being brash or being commanding or authoritative. And we are, I think, typically the ones that are supposed to step back and let the men have the leads, right? Like that's how society kind of has raised us up to, you know, or has influenced us to not assume that we should be on the equal ground when that lead comes up and that we won't be able to close it as well, right? Or when we have personal issues that we should take a step back or two or three and go be an admin when you could really be the boss or a higher up or one of the leaders, right?
Yeah, I mean, it would be easy to fall into that trap, but, you know, when a woman's confident and outspoken, it like you said, it's interpreted differently than when a man acts that way. So, I mean, there's definitely.
No, I don't like that. I don't like that. That's why I even push the envelope even worse than I do sometimes. You know what?
Well, I think that you just, there's a lot of things that you have to ignore in this business as a woman and just push through and do what you believe in and be the best advisor that you can be. And, you know, that's one of the reasons when I went out on my own in like 1999 that I committed to, you know, bringing other women into the business. And, you know, my goal was to have an all female firm, which, I do today. I've got, you know, 5 employees to, myself and my daughter works here with me and she's a CFP. We have 2 people that are taking the CFP and then, you know, a client service and, admin, and it's we're a great team. We provide excellent service, and it's very unusual. I think I'm the only all-female firm in this city, in Memphis, Tennessee, and there's just not that many of them around the country. And I feel like that was one contribution that I could make. When you look at the industry and how little has changed as far as the percentage of women in an advisor role from mm-hmm. when I started almost 30 years ago. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, what can I do as one person? And that is, it's not that I'm anti-men. I think there's many wonderful men advisors in this business, but there's just not as many opportunities for women. So if I can make any impact at all in that area, then I feel like I'm making my contribution. So that is, you know, I've purposely built it out that way. And, you know, I think we're building a great firm here.
I love it. It makes me proud of you from woman to woman. You know what I mean? It makes me proud to see this. And I wish I had gotten to you sooner to call more attention to this. Woman founded, woman run, female employees. And you serve women also in your firm, don't you?
Yes. Yes. We target women. We have lots of male clients. It's just when I redid my website a couple of years ago, we had to do a lot of research into where our clients were coming from. We actually took the time to do it. And it turned out that over 80% of the people that came through our door, either through, you know, referrals or workshops or the website or whatever, were through the female reaching out to us. So that, you know, we decided that we wanted to build our website with that in mind. And, you know, we say we're women working for women. We want to empower women to make wise financial choices. And it's just, you know, we continue to grow, and it's been great. And it has not isolated males from coming in.
It's just that
normally it's, you know, if the female initiates the relationship, and we do almost always start out with a financial plan when we're working with the client. And, you know, planning is a big deal for women. They want to know where they stand. They want to know if they're on track. They want that roadmap, and, you know, have less confidence in doing it on their own. And I think looking for a partner, an accountability partner, a partner to walk down that path is how we have built our business. And I think a lot of people like the fact that it's all women. And, you know, I've had some pushback from guys, kind of tongue in cheek, but, you know, isn't that discriminatory, not hiring men to come in? But, you know, I always say there's plenty of opportunities out there for guys, and it's not always the case for females that that they specifically are. I think it's happening more today, but, you know, to specifically and intentionally want to bring women into the business is a newer concept to a lot of people than it is to me, because it's been my life for the past 30 years. So, I had contacted New Planner Recruiting. This is a funny story. And I asked them if they could, if I engaged them, if I could if I could just ask for women recruits. And they, you know, kind of jokingly laughed and said, "We can't do that. That's, you know, that's anti-discriminatory," but or discriminatory, whatever. Anyways, I have an employee who reached out to them that was wanting to come to Memphis, that they gave them my name, which I thought was, you know, was really great, and I ended up hiring her. But, you know, it's just the industry statistics are not in our favor, but you can't go into a firm that does recruiting and say, "I only want to interview females." So which again is just about the opportunity and what my personal mission is for introducing and bringing females into this business, which is just such a phenomenal career for women.
Let's focus on that statement, a phenomenal career for women. When I was an advisor, was in a bad position because I had a baby that was a little over a year old, and then I had another baby, and that basically killed it for me. But I am in a different position than maybe some other women in the sense that I was still in like kind of the nascent stages of my career as an advisor. I didn't have a huge book and I eventually left the business. I mean, the other thing about it was again, I'm not knocking the career. It's just, I'm really not meant to be a financial advisor. Like I just, like financial statements, not my thing. You know, I'm bored by it. And I was very mediocre, I think, as a financial advisor, but, I do remember it even, I think it was a better career than most in terms of me being a woman and being able to have my family and have a career. But at the same time, there were still things about it that made it kind of tough. But why do you feel like financial advising is a great career for a woman?
Well, I think it allows you the flexibility to work on your own terms. You know, when my youngest child is 22, and when I had her, I went from a 5-day week to a 4-day week. Now, granted, mm-hmm. I have my own business, but that offered me the flexibility to be at home 3 days a week and only have to work 4 days. And I got as much done in 4 days as I had previously gotten done in 5 days. So I never had to miss anything that was going on at school. I could work my schedule around things that were important to me and not take appointments during times that I had commitments to my family. So I think that it's a great business that I've got friends that work part-time while they reared their kids and, you know, then went back to full-time. It certainly is, from a financial standpoint, if you're successful, it can be a very lucrative career, but that's not I think the driving point is that you have control over your schedule. You have control over the kind of clients that you want to work with. I mean, how many industries can you say no if it's not a good fit? You know, many businesses aren't built like that. So I just think there's freedom in being able to build out a business that works for you and works for the clients. And, you know, I think being a female, I have a better understanding for time off for mother duties and not wanting to work full time in the early years of having a child. It's not everybody is able to do that. It depends on their family situation, but I like to think that I can offer people some of the flexibility that I had when I was raising my kids. So mm-hmm. I think there is, and it's just, it's a career that is nurturing, and you know, you really get to help people realize their most important dreams and goals, and while still enjoying their life today. You know, we try to have that balance of helping people plan for all phases of their life, and that's just, to me, such a fulfilling thing to be able to do. You feel good at the end of the day, most days.
Well, they say that we women are the natural nurturers, right? They say that there's an idea that women are the nurturing gender, right? And so right. when you think about it, that would really, and no, and it's not that there aren't men that are nurturing. I mean, I've had so many men that have come into my life and influenced me and nurtured me. And I mean, in so many ways, right? But if we as women do have this tendency, then wouldn't that also align us very well with being able to excel in the career of financial advising?
Oh, absolutely. And I think the fact that women learn differently than men, women tend to ask more questions, want to understand why they're doing what they're doing. And I can't tell you how many clients over the years that I have gotten or taken on that said that they felt their advisor talked down to them, didn't listen to them, intimidated them. And that part of that could just be, you know, I think some advisors just think people should take their advice that they know best, and maybe they do. But if you're a woman and you need to understand why, then you shouldn't be made embarrassed or ashamed to feel like that you can't ask those questions.
Yeah, like I remember there was one point long, long time ago before Antonio and before any of my kids, I was dating this guy who was a doctor, and he was like really, he was a radiologist, and he was earning like an extraordinary amount of money. And at that point, it was when I had just started my business as a financial advisor, and I was not earning a lot of money, okay? And I went in, we were interested in buying an apartment, and we went in to talk to this real estate, this realtor. And I remember sitting there like, and the conversation was just, he was talking like directly to my ex-boyfriend. I mean, it was like I was a fly on the wall. Like, it was like, who makes the money and who doesn't, and you don't matter. And it was like he was treating my comments and my questions as if I was annoying.
Yeah.
Like, how do you have a right? It was as if, like, what makes you feel that you have a right to participate in this conversation when you're not the one making the decision? And it's like, well, because I'm going to be the one who's buying the furniture for the apartment, who's cooking in the kitchen, who's going to be maybe raising the kids here, who's going to be concerned about the school district, all of that. And he was just totally, like, didn't even want, I mean, and this was not even a, like, very senior in age person. This was like a colleague in terms of our age. Because, you know, how they say, like, oh, yeah, maybe the more senior people are not, are more chauvinistic or whatever. No, it was total chauvinism from like, a peer.
No, I mean, I have had those experiences. I remember when I moved into a new office and my husband was going with me to go buy office furniture. And he's very, I mean, I'm about 5'6", but he's 6'8". He's this very tall guy.
Are you kidding me?
Tall guy.
He's a gigantic person. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But anyways, we walk into this place and he immediately goes up to my husband wanting to know what he was here looking for. And my husband just kind of looked at me like, oh, this is the kiss of death. It's right. Like, I have had so many experiences like that. It's like, you have to find out who's making the decisions, and it may not be who you think it is. And, you know, so by just making assumptions, you know, clients can be lost very easily. And I think that still happens a lot in this day and age. I'm always surprised by it, but I've had at least 3 new female clients that came in with that reasoning.
That, I want to ask
somebody talked down to.
Right. Okay. Sorry. Someone talked down.
That's
to
right.
Me. Yeah. Okay. Let me ask you something else.
Okay.
I was talking to an advisor a few weeks ago, and this person has $200 million under management, been in the business, like you, very successful. And I asked him, said, how did you get to be so successful? And he said, I'm very good at reading body language. I'm very good at reading nonverbal cues. Do you think that supposedly, as women, we're more intuitive. We're the more qualitative, subjective, vibey, however you want to say it, you know, touchy-feely, you know, feelings matter kind of people versus men, more so than a man would be. Do you think that is an advantage as a financial advisor, or has been an advantage for you?
I do. I think that women are more likely to listen to their gut and, you know, that feeling of, you know, how does this person make me feel? Does this person understand me and what I'm trying to accomplish? And I think reading body language is really important and then a skill that can be honed. But I just think that women are raised more to, it's okay to show their feelings. It's okay to, you know, to talk about this just doesn't feel right in my gut and have that be legitimate and not something that you don't pay attention to. So I think in relating to clients, and especially since half the population is female, if you go in knowing that women like to learn in a different way, that they're going to have more questions and that you're not going to take that as an affront to your knowledge, but as just a way to make a person more comfortable and see if they feel like you're a good fit for what they're looking for. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but also I've written about this recently. I had a blog I wrote that basically lit my inbox on fire because it was called the two-sentence rule. And I was talking about how I've so many financial advisors just ramble on. And you know, the whole, you know, I mean, it has a lot to do with, I think, the way that sales training is sold to financial advisors or just in general. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times we're taught, like, say the two-sentence elevator pitch just say your elevator pitch or get your speech prepared. And it's like, communication is not about speeches and monologues. Communication is about dialogues. Do you know how many people get clear indications, or how many times have you been in a meeting or a phone call, or it shouldn't even be a phone call now. I mean, I've said this on other podcasts, by the way, everybody, you should be on Zoom or Ring Central or whatever it is. You should be looking at the person instead of talking with them. Anytime it is an important discussion, meaning important strategic relationship, client, prospect, whatever, you have to see their face and they have to see your eyes. No more phone calls. Okay. But getting back to my question, how many times have you been, and I myself would say I've been at fault at this in the past, but I'm learning and I've learned and definitely seen better results in my business as a result of this. Have you been on a phone call or in a meeting and you're not even checking to see if the person is listening while you're talking? It's only been since being a mother that I have started to really pay attention to this, because, you know, you can tell your kids to put their mittens on 5 times in a row and they're not going to get it the 5th time if you keep saying the same thing and talking at them. Like, this is one thing about children, right, is that they're so easily distracted that you have to get eye contact with them and you have to look at them and you have to check to see if they got it or not, and you can see it in their face. You can see on someone's face if they, you agree?
Absolutely. And I think that when you talk about dialogue, the dialogue being important, I mean, it's really not only looking at them, but really and truly listening and not thinking about what you're going to say next, because people know when those wheels are spinning and you're just waiting for that break so you can impart your knowledge. You know, we always talk about, you know, when you are asked an important question, that you take what I call a sacred pause. You don't just blurt out the answer, but think about the question and not like you had a pat answer on the tip of your tongue. You couldn't wait to get out. But really listening and taking that time to be thoughtful and respond when you're, especially when you're doing a discovery meeting to see if somebody is a good fit for your practice and vice versa.
Right. See, a lot of times advisors are so preoccupied with qualifying the person during the first meeting.
Right.
Because I don't want to waste any more time than this. It's like, okay, have a 20-minute Skype call before you agree to meet in person. And then you don't have to worry about, I got to put gas in the car and I got to get suited up and I got to leave my office and then I got to come back and my office is going to be an avalanche when I get back. And it's like 20 minutes is not that much time to spend on someone that might not be qualified. Because if they like you, I mean, have you ever had this experience? If somebody likes you, but they're not qualified, but you make a good impression on them and show them that you really care about them, they may come back to you in the future when they are. Or a lot of times people have said to me, Sarah, I'm not a fit for this, but I like you, so I'm going to refer you to this person or that person, or my book club president, or it's like it's a person. It's a person. You're not going to look at a car I don't like how the bumper looks, or I don't like the sunroof on the car. It's like, this is not the Chevy dealership. Okay. Like you're going to go, it's a person with other people connected to it.
Correct. Right. Yeah. I agree with you on that. 100%. And we actually do that. We always do a pre phone call just to see. I mean, you don't want to waste other people's time as well if it's just not the right fit for your firm. But maybe you can refer them somewhere else. Or, you know, I've had people that have come in that I was able to answer some basic questions. They were not a good fit that and I just told them that and why. And, you know, I've received thank you notes from people for treating them as nicely as we did. And also, you know, just letting them know that why they weren't a good fit at this point. And just, you know, you can make people feel good and important regardless, just treating them the way you would want to be treated, right? The golden rule, it applies.
I mean, when you make the right impression on somebody, they will find a way to do something nice back for you.
Right.
Because it's a person, right? It's mm-hmm. It's not like a robot or, it's not like a court case where it's like, okay, case adjourned. You know, it's not like that. What advisors need to understand, and I think this is where women can be particularly effective as financial advisors, is that when you meet somebody in this industry has such a bad impression. It's had such a bad reputation. And you have to operate with that assumption in mind. And so when you sit down with somebody, they have all kinds of ideas about you. Probably that are not true, but I talked to two people last week. Everyone who's listening to this podcast, I want you to know that I've talked to two of your peers last week that I am shocked that they are still in the business. And I talked to financial advisors all day long. And I had two meetings last week where I was more motivated after the meeting to find ways to get them out of the business than to help them market and promote their businesses, because they were such poor financial advisors. They were such poor people. They were poor as people, poor personality people, right? And you got to understand, there are still people like this in the business. There really are. And so when you sit down, all of that is coming to the table. And it's up to you to connect and wash over that and undo that. And that is why this is not a factual, the first meeting should not be factual.
No. No, I think it's, you know, putting the person in the center of the conversation rather than the money. We often don't even know at the end of the first meeting how much somebody has. We don't get into that.
Right.
Or I mean, it comes up a lot of times, but it's not, I mean, yeah. there have
it
been times
come up
when
at some point, you know, probably in the conversation. I mean, you can do different things to steer the conversation that way. But what you really want to figure out is what makes them tick.
Right.
Like who they are as people.
Exactly.
And what burdens they have in life. Because everyone has
what's
a burden
important
in life. Not everyone's going to say it. And then I love that story you were telling me also, Kathy, in the beginning, and then we got to wrap soon, but you were telling me in the beginning about that you had this experience when you were first starting out in the business about being in a room full of men and how do you conduct yourself. And I actually have a story about that too, but you know, tell me in your own words about what you were talking about.
Well, it was just, it was very intimidating and scary to go into industry type meetings and look around. And it's, you know, at that time, a bunch of suits and mostly older men, no women. And, you know, to go in with confidence and join in conversations and not be intimidated. And, you know, it was at that time inside, I, you know, I was quivering. But on the outside, I, you know, I just thought you have to look confident. You have to act confident. And it's what I said earlier was it's a, you know, fake it till you make it. And sometimes by doing that, you actually build up your confidence and get the respect of other colleagues. And, but you know, it can be really intimidating to see people, you know, almost a room full of people, 1.5 to 2 times your age, and you're coming in as the only female. I hate to say it, but when I go into meetings today, oftentimes there will only be 2 or 3 women in a room of 50, you know, so it hasn't changed dramatically, but there's usually at least another woman or two. I don't know. I'm trying to do my part.
You know what's really, what I have the funniest story. When I was, the first job I ever had, I was an RFP writer and I worked at JP Morgan. And I was, you know, whatever, like 21, 22, however old I was, maybe 22, 23. And I was doing well there, you know, and I was getting in these meetings with all these, you know, men and older men and everything. And I told this boss of mine who, and I was like, David, I was like, I don't know how to go to a meeting and behave. I don't know how to go to these networking events and conduct myself. And he was like, Sarah, he's like, do you think men at these meetings would rather talk to another man or would they rather talk to you, a woman? He's like, me, I would rather talk to a woman than another man. And I think it was because at the time I was this kind of like, you know, wearing the chandelier earrings and kind of, you know, little, how shall I say it? Like I was really like fun, you know, I was really like a lively 23-year-old or whatever I was and, you know, fresh faced and everything. I think that's kind of what he meant. Like it would be because, you know, men get out to talk to other men at the golf club or at the tennis club or whatever, you know, they have so many men they interact with socially and maybe don't get the opportunity to talk to a 23-year-old girl other than through work. And I was like, you know, it's true. And so I went into it. Here's what I did. I would go into these meetings with a little index card and I would have points written on there that I wanted to talk about. Because I looked at it from that point on like a game, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to go and I won't be at a loss for words because I'll know how to start a conversation with these people.
Yeah, yeah. That's great.
But it helped for me to understand that because I was the so-called minority in that situation, that that was a strength rather than a weakness.
Yeah. And I still think it's a strength today being a woman in this business.
Yeah. I love this. I love this conversation. Kathy, thank you so much for your sincerity and for your time. I think I'm going to wrap the podcast here now. But I, by the way, love Kathy's website. I was just impressed by the sea of women that I saw on your website one day. And I was like, this is what prompted my idea. I was really impressed by it, Kathy, and I sincerely thank you for all of your efforts, and I'm grateful to you also for the decisions that you have made to be able to go this way in life and to be able to represent us as women in the industry. I'm very appreciative, and I think a lot of my audience here listening across the world is as well, so thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. I enjoyed doing the podcast with you, and maybe we can do it again sometime.
Okay, cool. Okie dokie, signing off now. Everybody, please rate, review, and subscribe to this show. Bye till next time.